these two would be a plumber. He's a bummer, he's a bummer. Every summer, be a loyal plastic robot for a world that doesn't care.
Smile every ugly.
Shine on your shoes and cut your hair.
Go to work, be a jerk, go to work, be a jerk, go to work, be a jerk, go to work. Do your job and do it right.
My support.
TV tonight.
Do you love it? Do you hate it? There it is, the way you made it. Why?
If she were my daughter, I'd...
What would you do, Daddy?
If she were my daughter, I'd...
What would you do, Daddy?
If she were my daughter, I'd...
What would you do, Daddy?
Smother my daughter in chocolate syrup. Strap her on again.
Oh, baby.
Smother that girl in chocolate syrup. Strap her on again.
She's a teenage baby and she turns me off. I'd like to make her do a nasty on the White House lawn. Gonna smother my daughter.
To go home, Madge is on the phone.
Gotta meet the gurneys and a dozen gray attorneys.
TV dinner by the pool. I'm so glad I finished school.
Howdy, folks. This is Scott Parker, and you're listening to episode 18 of the ZappaCast for April of 2014. We're actually doing two episodes in a single month. Imagine that. In this episode, we're going to be catching up with one of our favorite guests and one of our favorite ladies in all of Zappa's universe, Ms. Pauline Butcher Bird, and she is going to be catching us up on some of her activities and some exciting stuff that's coming up in her world, and we're just generally having a very pleasant conversation. The conversation actually begins with Pauline asking Andrew about his book, Zappa the Hard Way, which, as many of you know, is the definitive account of the 1988 Frank Zappa World Tour. And so that's where our conversation begins. Now, one of the big things that Pauline is promoting here is her radio play, which is titled Frank Zappa and Me. Despite what you will hear during the conversation, that radio play will be broadcast by BBC Radio 4 on Tuesday, May 6th at 14:15 Greenwich Mean Time, which is quarter after 2 Greenwich Mean Time. So be sure to check that out. And so now, without any further ado, here is Pauline Butcher Bird, right here on the ZappaCast.
I've got some questions for Andrew about his book, Zappa the Hard Way. Okay, so you say in the beginning of the book that Chad Wackerman refused to be interviewed. Do you have any idea why that was?
My belief is that he just didn't want to revisit that period. It was a bad time for him, and he never said no, he didn't want to speak to me. He just never replied. He would talk to me about other things. I've interviewed him before, and we always had a good relationship. Never to
did he know, he didn't ever speak to Frank again?
No, not that I'm aware of, no.
So they actually had bad vibes at the end of it, those two?
Frank was clearly on Scott's side, and Scott remained friends. Scott Jr. is, but... Yeah, because Chad and Ed were at the centre of why things went wrong, and that's I can only imagine that he just didn't want to know again.
I've not understood why Ed Mann was so against you and so pro-Frank in his recent comments. It does seem odd to me.
He was pro-me for a long time, until after the book came out. And then he read a review of the book, which I didn't write. He read the blurb on the back of the book, which the publishers wrote, and he decided that I'd sensationalised everything without actually reading the book himself. And so he just blocked me and started bad-mouthing me to various other people.
Right, yes, he did try that with me, but he didn't get anywhere. But anyway, as far as his relationship with Frank, Frank had nothing good to say about him. In fact, spoke very, very badly about him about the breakup and implied that Ed Mann was the instigator behind the whole thing.
Well, I think Ed himself said he was Chad's mouthpiece, really, because Chad is quite a quiet guy. So Ed... and I think this comes out in the book that he spoke up for Chad. So Chad was his friend. He wanted to say what Chad couldn't say.
Yeah, why do you think that Ed Mann is so complimentary about Frank recently? And when I've been in touch with him, he's defended Frank when I've attempted to criticise him.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is?
I don't think he's ever really had a bad word to say about Frank. You know, on that tour, it was the other guy.
Well, Frank was incredibly rude about him. I was surprised in all his interviews. He implied he was really, really fed up with him. One other thing, you mention in your book that Frank played in many of his concerts on that tour versions of Norwegian Wood, Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, I'm a Walrus, Stairway to Heaven, and he vandalized those songs in many cases. He made fun of them sometimes. Now, why do you think it was okay for Frank to do that, but he doesn't think it's okay for anybody else to play his music?
That's a good question. I mean, he was doing it for years, really, wasn't he? From the early days, from Brown Shoes Don't Make It, included quotes from different pieces. And I don't know. I really can't answer that. I don't know why it is. It's a very contradictory stance, isn't it, to be able to go out and do that yourself? Presumably because he felt he was superior to the composer of those songs in some way. I don't know.
Scott, do you have a comment to make on that?
Yeah, as far as the Beatles thing goes, yeah, he was definitely one for vandalizing Beatles. But I also think that there was he was affectionate for certain, Beatle tracks. Yeah, I think so. And Stairway to Heaven has always been interesting to me. I mean, I guess it's it was the PMRC thing that sort of motivated him to cover the song, from what I understand.
What, because of the
so-called satanic
Satan when you met with...
yeah satanic nature of the lyric or something like that. It's definitely one of the many contradictory things that Frank did. He would take these liberties but then insist that other people not take liberties with his own material.
Yes, I would have challenged him on it if I had talked to him in later years and was aware of that. But I didn't know that I suppose it wasn't until after he died that the problem of other people playing his music came up. I mean, when he was alive, did other bands play his music without him complaining?
I know of one instance where... guy called Hans Andersen, you may have seen him on Facebook, he wrote to Frank in the early 90s and he was going to do Swedish lyrics for Penis Dimension, and Frank was happy to approve that and okay it. So, but now, if Hans wants to do a song featuring Frank Zappa song titles, Gail says, no, you can't do that.
So all these problems really rise from Gail rather than from Frank, do you think?
Well, I think that there is the grandmothers were functional in the early 80s, and they were playing some of Frank's music at that time, and Frank took serious exception to that.
That was because of the doll more than anything, wasn't it? The doll on stage that Don Preston used to. Don Preston had a large doll with Zappa's face on it, with Frank's face, and they would do things to it, abuse it in some way in concert, and that's what upset Frank.
Yeah, they would play. I think it was "Don't Go Cry on Somebody Else's Shoulder." I think it was, and yeah, they would do rude things to this doll on stage. That's right.
Jimmy Carl Black's memoirs.
I have.
Oh, right, because he talks in there about after the mothers broke up, after Frank broke the mothers up, Herb Cohen had an idea to get the members of the band, Don and Jimmy, to form the Grandmothers, to actually record an album. They recorded an album, recorded some tracks with Tom Wilson producing, and it was going to be presented as Frank Zappa presents the Grandmothers, but as soon as that idea was floated, you know, with Frank's name in it, the guys said, no, we're not going to go any further with this. Were you aware of that? So that was the Grandmothers, actually formed in 1970.
Yes, no, I wasn't. I may have been, but I didn't write it down, and if I didn't write things down, on the whole, I didn't remember them. So I wasn't privy to that, no, because I wasn't working with Herb Cohen, and if he was doing all that, then I wouldn't have known about it. I mean, unless, you know, Frank might have complained to me, but I wouldn't have, I don't think I would have registered at that point. So I'm afraid I can't add anything to that whole issue, I'm afraid.
Have you read Jimmy's book, anyone? Scott? Or...
I have, yeah. It's actually, I came into it with somewhat, I didn't know what to expect, you know, but I thought it was great. You know.
Interesting read, yeah. Another insight, another view of things. Definitely.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, Jimmy Carl was somewhat understandably bitter about the way that things went down, but we knew that anyway, you know. And
But he at least did make it up with Frank. Some of the others didn't. He did, you know, he was in 200 Motels. He was turning up playing with Frank later as well.
Yeah, up to...
occasionally.
About 1980, but then when they had their... The Grandmothers tried to sue, didn't they? Well, they successfully got some money back, payments in royalties, wasn't it, Scott?
Yes, they did, yes.
And that's when... Then Frank shut them off completely, then.
Yes. Oh, dear. I think it's the side of Frank Zappa that I'm not happy with. I don't particularly like that side of him. I think it's very one-sided, as you've already mentioned. You know, he had this thing, it's okay for me, but not for you type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it was the best side of his nature. It doesn't diminish what I thought of him. He's still a giant in the music business for me, of course. But that doesn't mean to say you can't see the faults in the man. He was human.
Yeah.
That's why I think your book, Pauline, actually... is actually, along with your book, Andrew, believe it or not, is, you know, those are two of my favorite books ever written about Frank, because they're, you know, they kind of, you know, show him as a human being, you know?
Yeah.
And I like that idea of tearing down the edifice, you know, and sort of exposing him as a human being who, you know, did a number of things right, but also did a number of questionable things.
Oh, Jelly Roll Gumdrop, got my eyes on you. Baby, don't you know how Jelly Roll Gumdrop got my eyes on you? The way you do that fire like a spinning top, the Pachuco High and the LSI, you make us trick our style at the soda shop. And my eyebrows pop when I see my Jelly Roll Gumdrop. Got my eyes on you. Mama, don't you know now, Jelly Roll Gumdrop. Got my eyes on you. When you put me all night, you're my heart's delight. You know I wish I might get a tiny bite.
of your jelly roll gumdrop. I wanna jelly roll gumdrop. I wanna jelly roll gumdrop. I wanna jelly roll gumdrop.
La la la, sha la la la.
Jelly roll gumdrop, got my eyes on you. Baby, don't you know about jelly roll gumdrop? Got my eyes on you.
The way you do the bop, like spinning top, the Portugal hop and the LA slop, you make a streetcar stop at the soda shop, and my eyeballs pop when I see my
jelly roll gumdrop. Got my eyes on you. Mama, don't you know now, jelly roll gumdrop. Got my eyes on you.
The way you boogie all night, and my heart's delight. No, I wish I might get a tiny bite of your
jelly roll gumdrop. I wanna jelly roll gumdrop. I wanna jelly roll gumdrop.
I've just got a couple of other questions which hinges on that whole issue, because Andrew mentions in his book that Frank, when the group were having a terrible row one day, Frank phoned up into the middle of it. He wasn't there, and he phoned up and said, "What's going on?" And they wondered how he could possibly know that there was a problem. But of course, he would have had spies in their midst. He would have had someone, one of the engineers or something, who he had asked to let him know what was going on. He did that with me, and I had to give him feedback on Herb Cohen to tell Frank what Herbie was really doing, because he didn't trust Herb to do what he thought he would say. And I think he did it with me, with Gail, and I think he told Gail to keep an eye on Pauline. I think that's how he worked. I don't want this whole thing to be a total condemnation of Frank, but obviously everyone knows how wonderful he was in so many other ways. So
I think it's fair, though, to, you know, because you got to see that side of him firsthand, you know. I mean, a lot of musicians who worked with him, really, even if they had issues with him at the time, have nothing but glowing things to say about him.
Yes, like you're saying, Ed Mann is an example. He really says a bad word against Frank, but, you know, even though, yeah, that's probably that period when it all went wrong was traumatic and has, you know, a long-lasting effect on him, but it's still, you know, it's, will readily praise Frank.
Yes, well, I mean, I guess they obviously, you could see in all of the groups the respect they had for him. I mean, it seems to come across on the stage, don't you agree?
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, to this day, you know, that he just gets, you know, even by the people who he really did not treat well, you know, which would, I guess, be most of the 1988 band would be a good example of that. You know, they were all pretty much ostracized, right? With the exception of, I guess, Ike Willis went to see Frank when he was very ill.
Yeah.
And sort of made it up with him then. Mike Keneally stayed, and Scott Tunis stayed, but the rest of that big band was sort of cast into the void, as they say, and that was pretty much it. He just kind of cut them off.
But then again, you know, had he lived, I could quite easily have seen him working with some of those musicians again. I don't see, you know, he worked.
I think so. I agree with that.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, he was very hurt when, as I understand it, he was very hurt when Mark Volman and Howard Kalin, when they left the Mothers in 71, early 72, they kind of badmouthed Frank in the press at a time when Frank was laid up and in his wheelchair. And, you know, my understanding is that he was pretty hurt by that, because if you believe what
he said in interviews later, he actually considered them to be friends, as well as you know, not just sidemen, you know. Howard's book doesn't really make it sound very much like they were friends, but Frank said that he felt that they were friends. But he wound up, you know, working with them again on a couple of different occasions. They came down to rehearse with the band that became the 1988 band, but, you know, as we know, it didn't work out because they didn't want to sing those lyrics, and, you know, the pay wasn't good enough, and
And I think that, didn't he do an interview with them after that as well on the radio?
He did, yeah, yeah, when they were doing that radio show in New York.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, yeah.
My one disappointment in his book was that he did go to see Frank when he was ill as well, didn't he? He did go and see him.
Yeah, they all did.
Yeah, and he mentioned that Frank told them the things he was going to miss when he died, but he didn't tell us what those things were, so I found that very frustrating. I would like him to tell us sometime what those things were, because I would be very interested to know.
That was not in 72, we're talking about towards the end of Frank's life, you mean?
Yes, yep. Yes, when he went to see Frank when he was ill, the last time he saw him at the house, and Frank was talking about things he was going to miss, and he mentions that in his book, but he doesn't tell us what those things were that Frank said that he would miss, which I was very disappointed in that. But otherwise, I enjoyed reading it very much. Both of you, Andrew mentions in his book that two songs in particular, Nigger Business and You Are What You Is, are racist songs. And I wondered if you would comment on that.
I say that they have racist undercurrents, I think. It was purely, that was spurred on by a comment from Scott Tunis when I was asking what happened to Ray. Ray White was going to be on the tour in 88, but left rehearsal at some point in 87 and disappeared. And Scott Tunis, possibly with his tongue in his cheek, said that perhaps Ray tired of the racism inherent in either of the songs or Frank's attitude. So, that was really what I was picking up on. But I then go on to say, that I don't think he was a racist in any means. I just think there, in the way that he would write a song like Jewish Princess, he would take the mickey out of anything, everything and everything. Anything. So, sometimes that would mean he would touch on taboo subjects and things. So, I don't know, but I suppose in the case of You Are What You Is, the actual line, which has the N-word, is not sung by either of the black guys in the band at the time. So I just wondered if they would have had a problem singing it. But Frank was happy to.
What do you think, Scott?
Well, yeah, I think that's true. I think, Frank had, he loved to upset people. I think that one of the things he lived for was, I think, to upset people. And, he was very, I think that particular form of racism, at the time, wasn't as big of a deal, but it would be quite a big deal now if somebody said that on a record, but... a white person said that on a record, and that's pretty well true. But I think it was just in his nature to poke fun at, because he'd have people like George Duke and Napoleon Murphy Brock, and he absorbed some of that 70s funk black culture, And I think he almost got to feel in a way a part of it, but also. To be able to look at it from an observer's point of view. And I think that sort of, made it okay in his mind, when he would write things like, Nigbiz and things like that. But, those songs, I think, were just basically written to upset people, I mean, Nigbiz was about the music business anyway, but, the use of that word, it was... I think it was just thrown into, much like Jewish Princess. I think he could have gotten the point of Jewish Princess across in any other way, but he chose the most direct way.
But Andrew, do you think Ray White did object to singing those songs? And is that what the problem was? He objected to it. He felt hurt by it.
I don't know if they ever sing those songs live now. That's a point, I suppose. With the band from Utopia or with Ray White, I don't think they would ever sing that song.
No, I don't think so.
No. So, I don't know the answer. We have to ask Ray the question, but I think they would shy away from singing those songs,
You would think it would be somewhat degrading, though, to, if you are... an African American, you would think it would be somewhat degrading to, which is not to say that I dislike the songs, but that's a whole other issue. But I can't really see him singing it. I mean, he left the band in 77 because he wasn't comfortable with some of the lyrics. I know that.
Yeah.
When he first left, it was that.
And I guess Mark and Mark Volman was also unhappy, and that's why they didn't want to come back. And they didn't want to sing some of those lyrics.
Yeah, he was going to make him sing,
Wanda LaRue.
Yep, Magdalena, things like that. And it was, they were not going to... risk their careers by singing that stuff because, again, Magdalena is another song. You could not get away with that now.
No.
There's just no way. But they absolutely did not want to sing those songs. He doesn't really touch on that in the book, though, does he?
No, he doesn't go into great detail about that, no.
Yeah, I mean, he's
I thought he did mention that he didn't. They didn't want to sing the. They worked hard to, you know, build up a new image and a wholesome image, and they had children in their audiences and stuff, and they didn't want to spoil their image by singing those songs.
I think that's in other interviews in my book. In Howard's book, he doesn't mention the 87 rehearsals.
Oh, is it? Oh, right. Oh, gosh. That's where I got it then. I've missed... Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that's it. He did say that even when Frank was alive, he said that in interviews. Yeah. I can't imagine that Frank missed, you know, all of those interviews, but I guess maybe he did. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. There are certain songs that members of the band had an issue with. I know that Ed Mann, for example, had an issue with We're Turning Again. Did he actually call Frank out on that, or was it just something he said in an interview where he... Are you familiar with that song, Pauline? You must be.
No.
That's a song that basically takes on, you know, 60s pop culture icons and sort of destroys them. You know, Janis Joplin, who Frank is alleged to have slept with, by the way, Jim Morrison, you know, Keith Moon, people like that. And gives them a very mocking treatment. And Ed Mann apparently thought that that song was extremely disrespectful and didn't really feel, you know, didn't feel great about playing it, but, you know, he had to do it. But that's an example of a song that I know a band member found, you know, objected to.
To worry, we're always in a hurry to convince ourselves that what we are is really very groovy. If we believe what's in the papers and the magazines that define our folklore, we can never laugh at who or what we think we are, or even what we think we sort of ought to be, because we are totally empty.
Totally empty.
And our lives are really useless, so what the fuck? Of humor. We got nothing left to laugh about, including ourselves. They tried to stuff them up the guns of all the cops and all the servants of the law. They tried to push them around and made them blow them down, but they were full of all that shit that they believed in. So what the fuck?
What the fuck?
They would tighten up their headbands on the weekend. They'd get loaded when they came to town. They walked around in Greenwich Village to buy posters they could hang up in their smelly little secret blacklight bedrooms on Long Island, screaming, Jimmy, come back! Come back and regulate my buzz zone. Your haze was so purple, and your axis was bold as love. Jimmy, feedback! Come back and feedback on my knapsack. You can feedback the buzz zone from your like we are something really special. Wow. Oh, we'll just jump in the bathtub with that other guy, Jim, and make him be more careful. Then we'll visit Big Mama and whap her on the back when she eats her sandwich. Friday first, we can take care of Janice. When she gets so depressed, she can't take it no more. We can laugh at Keith Moon's jokes. And the color TV, wah, wah, she threw out the window from the second floor. Everybody come back. No one can do it like you used to. If you listen to the radio and what they play today, you can tell right away.
I think that's another example of, you know, it's okay what I do, but you can't do it to me. I mean, if he was disrespectful to those singers, and then when the grandmothers were making fun of Frank, then that wasn't allowed.
Yeah, that's an excellent example of that, actually, because Ed said, and as a matter of fact, in the very same interview, which I have here somewhere, he said, basically what you just said, that you could, you know, Frank could make fun of anybody, including anybody in the band, but you could not, Frank could not take a joke. So he, you know, he could not have it thrown back at him. And, you know, I guess it's fair to say, I think that he created a, you know, a so-called, you know, Zappa's universe, you know, partly to shield himself from criticism within that universe.
I suppose the other thing is, in the case of the grandmothers, he would argue that, you know, he gave them their careers, so why should they be, you know, he gave them a livelihood to some extent. You know, why should they then be nasty towards him for giving them that big break?
Yeah,
I think he should be able to take a joke.
Well, yeah, precisely. And that's what Frank always said, you know, if he can't take a joke, fuck him.
Yes. Well, I think you might be the only person, Pauline, who ever would challenge him on that, who was in his inner circle, who would challenge him on those things.
Well, it's debatable, actually, because obviously the longer I worked for him, the more in awe I got of him, like everybody else, you know. I mean, at the beginning, I was very feisty and challenged him all over the place, but as I went on, I got more and more careful about, because he had that look, that stare, you know, that way of making you feel like you should go through a hole in the floor when you'd said anything wrong. I guess I probably wouldn't have challenged him later on, not so much, no. I did in my 1988 interview, I did a little bit. I don't know whether you've heard that.
I have, yeah.
With on his lyrics with Party Hats, the jazz Party Hats song.
Yep.
And, you know, I thought, well, why do you want to write songs about that kind of stuff? But that was mild. I don't think these other things we've talked about, I might have challenged him on where they were a bit more serious.
Yeah, it would have been, definitely would have been interesting, because he didn't really have, you know, anybody around who would challenge him on virtually anything, especially, you know, say the last 10 years of his life. He really didn't have anybody. Must have been, you know, in a way, it I'm sure it was in some ways a very lonely life for him, you know.
Did you see that interview on YouTube where the young interviewer did challenge him when he turned up in a Cadillac for the interview or
something. Yes, yes.
And then he put him in the boot. I mean, that's, you know, you just could not do it. He would just turn it on you.
That was great, because it's one of the most hostile interviews I've ever seen by anybody. You know, Frank just reacted so, you know, he just destroyed him, basically.
He did. Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I actually had, when I first had my book published, I had messages from a couple of other young journalists who felt they'd been destroyed by him mm-hmm. when they went to interview him. One of them was traumatized right up until now, and he was in his 50s or 60s.
Really?
And because of the way Frank just was so flawed him. So you had to really be tough to deal with him.
I wonder if Gail ever challenged him on any of those lyrics.
Oh, good gracious, no. well, I hope... I don't know.
Which is very different now.
No. Whatever Frank said was repeated again by Gail. She was Frank Zappa incarnate.
And still is.
And still is. Yeah.
So she would not, yeah, I mean, that's what I mean by, you know, this sort of lonely life he must have had. Because you do need to be corrected sometimes. You know, it makes for a healthier life. And Frank had, but, you know, intentionally, he spent since 1965, I guess it was, building this world in which he could not be challenged easily. He could not be criticized easily. And the more power and more control he got, the stronger the walls were built, I think.
Yes, but it's interesting because there's another paradox, there's another contradiction. Because the very first day I met Frank, I challenged him on the lyrics of Brown Shoes Don't Make It.
That's right.
And I think a lot of people who had their songs challenged and criticized would have shown me the door. But he didn't do so. He seemed to enjoy the debate. He seemed to enjoy the challenge.
You know,
but that was early in his career, of course, and maybe he changed later.
I don't want to talk about anything. I sit here because somebody said you're going to do a television interview. Here I am. Ask me the questions. But like I said, you ask me a question, I'll tell you what I think. And the results, you never know what it's going to be.
Why are you still making tours?
Well, I've been practicing for 14 years, and I'm getting good at it now. I think that a lot of what I do is based on reporting. I see something, and I report on what I see based on my point of view. My point of view is not a normal point of view, and I tell people about what I see about it. They can agree with it, or they can say it's bullshit, or whatever. I don't care. But it's there for the ones who like it, for the ones who don't. There's millions of other groups. Yeah, I take a very cynical point of view. I think that being cynical is a positive value. I think that nobody should trust anybody else. I think that all people are assholes until proven different. And I think that if you take that point of view, you will be disappointed less in life. If you always expect the worst from people, then the minute they do something nice, it's a pleasure. If you think that people are good, then you'll always be disappointed, because they're not. They don't care. You know? Don't expect friends. Don't expect fun. Don't expect a good life. Don't expect anything. And then if you get something, it's a bonus. Understanding the text isn't understanding the music, or understanding the reasons for saying those words or playing that music. You know, English people don't get the idea of what we're doing.
Is your stage act influenced by this circumstance that the people don't understand the text?
Yeah, it is. Especially when we're playing in places where there's very little English spoken. Because I don't think that it's fair to the audience to sit there and, you know, like for some of the songs, there's long stories that you have to tell before you play the song. So I just leave them out because the audience won't understand it. It won't help the song any.
There's one thing which is quite interesting. In the beginning, you were often criticizing the so-called American way of life. And years later, then more and more in your songs was one theme very important was sexuality. How come?
Well, first of all, the original criticisms of the American way of life still stand true. Not only that, the records are still available. And only a moron repeats himself for the rest of his life. The stuff that I said on the first albums is still true. and they're still available. If you want to hear that stuff, go listen to those records. Somebody has to talk about sexuality. The rest of the people just talk around it. I'm here to provide that service, to talk about the things that other people don't want to talk about. Dental floss.
Well, you know, that does bring up an interesting point, though, because in the Cadillac Extravaganza interview, which is the interview where Frank was initially very hostile and sort of destroyed the interviewer, he wound up being friends with that interviewer later, you know, sort of being friendly with him, and that same interviewer came back to do several interviews, including the last year of Frank's life. He that very same team that did that interview filmed the footage of Frank's last project, The Rage and the Fury, is Edgar Varese tribute. And
right.
So maybe Frank respected you more in a way if you were brave enough to challenge him.
Yes.
Do you think there's anything to that?
I do, yes. But it took a lot of, you know, it took a lot of courage to do that, because I think his very presence was so austere, you know, it was quite hard. I mean, for example, my husband, when I first was married and I took my husband to meet Frank,
mm-hmm.
and we went to Bingham Hall in Staffordshire when he was playing in 1977, I think it was,
mm-hmm.
and we went backstage and talked to Frank, and I told Frank that I had given up smoking because of all the controversy about smoking and cancer,
uh-huh.
and he retorted that it was a government conspiracy to stop people enjoying themselves or something to that effect,
mm-hmm.
and my husband said to him, well, that's reactionary. And of course Frank did not like that at all, being told he was reactionary of all things. So we were shown the door immediately.
Was he really?
He said I have to get ready for the concert, because it was backstage before the concert. So he told us to leave, and we did.
I don't think is that in the book? That's not in the book, is it? I don't think.
No.
That's an interesting. That's an interesting story. I haven't heard that one before.
Well, I put it back in my new version, but I can't get my publisher to change it, because I'm not overly happy with my book. I've taken all the peripheral characters out and made it more focused on Frank and the mothers and me and the central people around him. So I think it's much better. It's structured better, and I put some of those little stories back in.
So are you going to? Well, it's never been out on Kindle yet. It's not a Kindle.
No, it was promised last September. It's never happened. I'm waiting for my publisher. I hope she's listening to this to tell me why.
For those of you who do not know, Pauline is working on a play version of her book.
No, well, I am, but that's for the stage. But the BBC Radio
oh, yes.
4, are putting out, someone else has adapted the book for a radio play, and it's going out on May the 9th on BBC Radio 4, afternoon play. It's only 45 minutes. I don't know how they're going to cram everything in, but, I mean, I presume it's just me and Frank mostly. But someone's going to be playing Frank, and someone is going to be playing me. Well, there's two me's, actually. One is me as the older person, and me is one as the young girl. I don't know who else is in it. I haven't seen the script yet, so I don't know. But when I do get to see it, I'll publicise it.
Yeah.
So that's exciting, I think.
Definitely.
It's very exciting. How did that project come to be?
Well, it took 10 years. I started the original project. My book was originally a radio play. That's how it started. And I worked on it with a producer, because I was trying to write radio plays, and the producer said, you must write something that no one else can write if you want to break into the BBC network. So I thought, but the only story no one else could write is my time with Frank Zappa. So that's what I started to write as a play. And then Jermaine Greer came up with a program on Frank Zappa, and she'd only met him once, so I don't know how she could. Well, anyway, she was a famous person, so she got commission to do it. And then they scrapped my play because they wouldn't do two in 1 year. So I was so mad. I was so angry after all that time. That was about 6 years I'd been struggling. Yeah. And so I wrote to every publisher I could find in the books and said, I'm writing a book about Frank Zappa and my time. Are you interested? And 12 publishers wrote back and said yes. Oh. So I knew I had a viable product.
Yeah.
So then when I got to Singapore, I decided to write it. But now we're back with the play again. And somebody else has done it, so I don't know how they've done it.
Did you keep your original script that you started working on?
No, it's no good. I'm starting again. No, I haven't got that, no. In fact, it would have been hopeless, because I did it before I read all my diaries, and it was the diaries and the letters. Yeah. That brought back all the memories, that stimulated the memories that made the book possible. Before yes. that, I was just doing it from memory, so it was quite sketchy.
And the letters home as well.
Yes, the letters and diaries, yes. So it's exciting. So I'm hoping that I can get it online and people can hear it. I wonder who they're going to get to play Frank Zappa. I mean, it's quite hard to get his voice right. He had a very interesting way of speaking, very, very interesting turn of phrase. If we can say some nice things about him for a minute, because we've
sure.
done a good hatchet job on him so far.
Well, yeah, his voice was sort of captivating, wasn't it, in a way?
Yeah, fabulous, yes, absolutely fabulous, yeah.
That was one of the things when you talk to people who knew him, you know, they always, if you get into a sort of character, you know, personality, you know, character analysis, that kind of thing, you always hear about his voice. It's just very commanding.
But
it's,
what was interesting about it was so quiet. He never raised his voice. It was so quiet, but low, and so positive, you know? So mm-hmm. that's what got you. It was so quiet. I think his voice was fascinating, as he was altogether a fascinating, wonderful man. I wish to say that after having said all these bad things about him.
Well,
oh, dear.
If we felt really bad, we wouldn't even be talking about him, would we? So, you know.
No, that's right, yeah.
That's so true.
I mean, that's what always impressed me, when you hear concerts and just the introductions to songs and the things that he just... seemingly makes up on the spot. You know, he's so insightful, so witty, so I wish
very.
I could that. Yeah.
That cutting remark to the guy who was screaming, and he just said, stop it, you know, you're going to hurt your throat.
Yeah.
And it sort of just shut him up. It was so perfect.
And that was kind of typical Frank, right? Because you say in the book, even when Frank was angry, he didn't raise his voice. He just had a very calm way of dealing with it.
I only saw him angry once. I mean, he would get an angry response, but I never only saw him actually fully fledged angry once, when I had that scene with the GTOs and I told them to take their smelling salts.
Yeah, it wasn't smelling salts.
No. Well, I didn't know that. I mean, that's how ridiculous the whole thing was, that I was in charge of these girls who were running me amok, you know, ran me ragged.
Yeah.
And I didn't know. But I was in charge of them. But I think helped them to get their act together. They wouldn't have done it so well without me, probably. I think I'm fairly okay on saying that.
Now, wait a minute. Just pretend like you don't know me.
Kansas?
Kansas?
Excuse me, but I never saw anyone in Kansas that's dressed like that. Do you wear those kind of clothes all the time?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Every day, huh?
It's our daily apparel.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we have
very
even
good.
Better things, you know.
It only happens once, so you only look this way once.
Yeah, that's right. Only once.
Only once.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Tomorrow it might be a different effect, you know, just adding something else.
Do you think you'd go to Kansas where no one even has long hair and wear clothes like that?
Mm-hmm.
Do you?
Sure, I would like to go to Kansas just to see how it is, you know.
Would you?
Sure.
It's
trip
pretty
out.
Frightening, I'll tell you that. So where do you all live?
Laurel Canyon.
Laurel Canyon. Where's that?
You can let this happen.
Log cabin. The country store. Red
country
room.
Store, what's that?
It's great for socializing, and all the groups you see, that's where music gets in. You know, music always gets in there.
Oh, yeah? Well, I dig music. I just sit around in Kansas and play records all the time, and there's nothing else to do. You see, you go out very much, and you'll always get beat up by a bunch of drunks.
Hey, drop, drop, top, tap, tap, good day, bow. Yellow wrap around, go watch us that never show. His blue eyes, what a fantastic disguise. He's so grand and fantastic, so wonderful. The T of his T strap stands for tippy toes. His tippy toes fit him to a T. OCB do a tip in for me. With your bigger fat tippy toe Teresa shoes. A jacket with virgin buttonholes, reaching for experience buttons. Thin striped cords that circle his porcelain ankles. Finally, down to the captain's fat Teresa shoes. The T of his T strap stands for tippy toes. His tippy toes fit him to a T. OCB do a tap dance for me. With your bigger fat tippy toe Teresa shoes. His blue eyes, what a fantastic disguise. He's so gay and fantastic, so wonderful. The elevator classic.
Have you had much contact with any of them lately? GTOs?
I've been in touch with Mercy and Pamela and Sparky, the only three that are still alive.
Yeah.
Huh. The others have all died. But not since the book's been published. They were all in touch before the book was published and did help me with a few details and things, but I think they were a bit disappointed that they weren't mentioned more. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe not, I don't know. But they haven't been there.
The radio play, that's going out in May?
May the 9th.
May the 9th.
And that will be 2:30 in the afternoon, which will be about 10:30 in the morning, your time.
Okay.
But mind you, the clocks will be changed by then, so it might be different. It might be 9:30.
Yeah, on Radio 4.
Yeah, BBC Radio 4.
So can people outside of the UK get the iPlayer? Can you listen to things?
I can, actually. I can listen to the radio. I can't get TV, unfortunately. I can't get BBC TV, but I can get I can definitely get BBC Radio, so...
The only thing that I'm not sure about as yet is the title. I'm waiting to hear, because the title of the play hasn't been decided yet. They don't want to call it Freak Out, because the Jermaine Greer's program was called that, so that... I don't know what they're going to call it, but I presume they want his name in the title.
Yeah. Your book was originally going to be called Reflections, wasn't it? Reflections of...
No, Reflected Glory, I wanted it to be called, but which is what I think it's about. But, you know, my wish to get some of the charisma from working with a famous man around me, but then eventually I come to see that I can do it on my own, which is a bit of a joke, because in order to get my book published, I had to write about him again. So it's a paradox, really.
Just hurt your heart. It's too late now for them to.
skies above. Who cares if hair is long or short or straight or partly gray? We know that hair ain't where it's at. There will come a time when you won't even be ashamed if you are fat. Wah, 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 wah.
Dance and love.
There will come a time when every evil that we know will be an evil that we can rise above.
Rise above.
Who cares if you're so poor you can't afford to buy a pair of Mada Go-Go stretch elastic pants? There will come a time when you can even take your clothes off when you dance.
So when you create a revised edition of the book, it will be very thoroughly revised, essentially rewritten, did I hear that correctly?
No, it's not. It's just restructured. It's better. It's just that I've put Pamela, Zerubica and Gail together in one chapter as my adversaries. You know, like I was enjoying working for Frank, but there were two other women in his life. Mm-hmm. And I put them together in one chapter and made that more sensible rather than the way it is at the moment with my dribbles of complaint about Gail throughout the book. Do you see what I mean? That sort of thing.
Sure.
I've just structured it better and then taken out some of the peripheral stuff with Matt Cohen and anything that's away from Frank too much. So I've made it more focused on Frank.
I think it reads pretty well as it is, but I see your point. I mean, you know,
I know, concise. Yeah, a lot of people do get bored in the middle. It goes on and on and on. So I, you know, I just think it. I've taken out about 40 pages, I think.
Okay, so it's just going to be shrunk down and made more concise.
It's just better structured, and it's got titles for the chapters, and they're more easy to follow what's going on, and the chronology, you know, the order of it is all better. It's just a better book. I know it is. So I'm hoping that will come out later. But my publisher's not keen because I've only sold 4,000 copies of the book, and yet on the Frank Zappa Facebook page, there are 450,000 people have liked that page.
Huh.
So where are they all?
That's an interesting thing, Pauline, because when I wrote my book, I've got, you know, some very close Zappa fans, Zappa friends, and I took two of my closest, I gave them a copy of the book, and they said, great, you know, but we don't actually read books very often. So, yeah. It means, you know, for all those thousands of fans, how many of them actually do sit down and read books? I was quite surprised. It's quite taken aback that these guys that I'd known hadn't realised that, yeah, I know pretty well that they don't actually sit down and read books that often.
But you'd think more than 4,000 out of 500,000 people. Yeah. So you'd think that more than 4,000 would read.
The Idiot Bastard Son. The father's a Nazi. Back of a car. Kenny will stand.
church he'd attend, warming his pew.
What made you, this is sort of a, I have a couple of quick questions but that I wanted to put in here, but what made you come back to the UK, Pauline?
Well, my husband retired and he finished his work, or so he thought, in Singapore. And so we planned to come back, but then he got asked by his company to stay on 2 days a week, and then somebody else asked him to be a consultant, and then somebody else. And so now he's got five different companies he's working for, so he couldn't come back. So I've ended up coming back on my own. He could come back, but he can't turn down. He's retired, so he's only got another 2 or 3 years working. And if he can make some money in those 2 or 3 years, he might as well. So I've come back on my own.
I didn't realise. I thought you'd both come back.
Well, no, he came back, but then he went back again because he's working out there, you see.
Yeah.
And I was planning on visiting him from time to time, and he will come back here from time to time. So that's how we'll do it. And there's emails and there's phones every day, so it's not so bad.
Are you enjoying being back in merry old England?
I do. I like it. Yes, I love Singapore too, but I'm always happy to move on. You know.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm in another sphere, another time. So yeah, we found a nice house in Cobham. So I'm learning to live here and enjoying it. Yes, I didn't like that winter, of course, the rain, but we were okay. We weren't flooded. So it's lovely. See the trees coming out and the flowers.
Yeah, we haven't quite gotten that here yet. It's still about 10 degrees Fahrenheit over here. It's still absolutely freezing out, but...
Where are you?
I'm in Waterbury, Connecticut, which is about 90 minutes or so from New York City.
Oh, that's a nice part.
It is, actually. Well, Connecticut is very nice, and it's nice to be near, you know, the epicenter of everything that's happening on the East Coast, but not be in the epicenter itself, you know.
That's
to be able to walk away from it is kind of nice, you know. But, you know, being back in England, because England's a big place, but have you had any contact with one of your fellow log cabin fellows who has relocated to England also, Pamela Zarubica?
I have, yes. But she is also unhappy with me. So I haven't done very well with the people in my book. She is very, very unhappy with me because when I saw her, I was working on the play.
Mm-hmm.
And she, you know, we discussed the play and everything was fine. And then I wrote to her when I got to Singapore, but she again didn't reply. She didn't reply.
Huh.
So, I mean, these people don't answer my emails or don't reply to my letters. I wrote her a letter. because she didn't have emails, she didn't have the internet, and she didn't reply. So when she the book came out, she phoned up my publisher and was furious, absolutely livid, and I hadn't told her. So I don't know why, I mean, really, but she was fine, she's living in London. And she's made a video. It's on YouTube. Have you seen it?
I have seen it, yes. Have you seen it, Andrew?
Yes, she's done a few, hasn't she?
She has, yeah.
Supposedly making, supposed to be a film project, but it's been, she's been doing it for like quite a few years now. And it doesn't look very professional or like it's going anywhere, to be honest.
Yeah, looks like it was shot with an iPhone, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, she did tell me, when I saw her, she said to me, you must see my video and you must close the curtains and make sure the phone's off the hook so you can concentrate because it is fantastic. Yeah. So that's what she told me. So when I saw it, I was, less than... Less than that. You know, I think less she overplayed it a bit. But I haven't heard from her since. But I'm disappointed, really. I'm disappointed. I would have liked to have kept in touch with them, and I would have liked to have shared the memories, but it hasn't worked out.
I wonder why she would get upset over something like, you know.
Well, she said she didn't mind the radio play. She didn't mind the radio play. But a book... she said that she didn't, I don't know whether it's because she's written her own book and it hasn't been published or what, but she felt that a book put the, you know, things in too much cement, as it were. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, I've only used about 5 sentences from our conversation when I saw her in London, in the book. The rest of it, she was so zonked out the whole time I was there on drugs, she didn't remember most of it. And she didn't remember her boyfriend she had even, because I remember it, because I've got it written down in my diaries and my letters.
She had no recollection of him at all?
No, she can't remember him, no.
Oh,
I told her his name was Don, but she didn't remember who he was, so... That I mean, so she implied to my publisher that, you know, the book was all her book or something. It was utterly ridiculous, but there you go. I don't want to say too much. It's not fair because I really would like to be friends with her and I would like to find some way to make it okay, but it's not. I did phone her again and told her Ray Collins' phone number and address because I knew she wanted to get in touch with him, but she more or less put the phone down on me.
So that was, it had to be a few years ago, I would guess, the last that phone call.
No, that was only just before he died. That was, he only died a couple of years ago. No, I phoned her a couple of years ago. It's all happened since the book came out, all this bad feeling from her. He was okay before it.
Well, it might be the thing of the idea of your book possibly stealing her book's thunder, although I don't really see why that would be, because it's, you know, it's two different points of view, so maybe she felt that. It's possible.
Yes. The only line I used from her was about the GTOs, because... She told me, I said to her, what can you remember and what can you tell me about myself that you remember? And she said, I remember you did so well with the GTO. So she was very gracious about that. And you helped them and you made them the way they are. And so I used that in the book. But everything else is from my diaries and letters.
Bizarre. No one could ever understand our bizarre relationship because I was your intellectual, frigid housekeeper. Especially when you'd be going to bed with one chick at night and I'd wake up in the morning and find another one there screaming at me, asking me what the fuck that chick was doing in your bed, and I'd walk in and you weren't with the same one you were in the night before. Oh, I'll never forget that as long as I live. The house, well, it had your shit all over. And we had a cat, and we had fleas, and we had lots of crabs that we proceeded to give to everyone in Laurel Canyon except for Elmer and Phil because they were too sick to ball. Elmer has a mentality of approximately 1 peanut, possibly. As a matter of fact, I can remember Elmer telling me that you really had a lot of talent, but he didn't see how anyone could ever make it that insisted on saying fuck on stage. And he used to drive by in his gold Cadillac and peer in the window. Because he never could get over the amount of groupie status that you had, and he didn't. Possibly because he's 50 years old and wretched.
I'm not sure how much of your life is taken up by talking to people in the, you know, the Zappa fan community and that kind of thing, but I know you've got a lot of friends on your Facebook page that are that are Zappa fans, and, you know, certainly us included. But what has the, you know, have you gotten a lot of positive response on the internet from fans and...
Well, I think their reviews are pretty amazing on Amazon.com and Amazon.co.uk. So I'm amazed by that. They are very, very flattering and very nice. On Facebook, yes, I put a lot of effort into it right at the beginning. But I don't think it has much effect. You know, I've sort of got a close-knit number of people I sort of got to know now, about 1,500 people, I would say, that are regulars on my page. And then beyond that, all these 500,000 other Zappa fans, I have no idea where they are. Oh, dear.
No, I'm sorry. It was just the thing of having to, or trying to reach these people, maybe. You know, because everybody, you know, if it, all you folks out there, if you do not have the book, get Pauline's book, because it's, you know, I mean, it's one of the best books ever written about Frank. So, you know, if you don't have it, you should. I assume that virtually everybody who hears this may have a copy of the book, but maybe not. So if we can move some books, you know, absolutely. But yeah, you should. Yeah, it's amazing because... You know, 3,000-4,000 books is kind of in line with what I sell in my books. So maybe it is just this sort of group of people who actually read things.
Yes. What about, did you do interviews and get reviews of your book in the States?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I have done a fair amount of interviews over the years, but since mine are kind of more reference works... you get a lot of the people who want to ask you about specific recordings and, you know, things of that sort. And I get just as much interest about doing the podcast too, but yeah, there is plenty of interest in the States. As a matter of fact, I was thinking, you know, it would be nice to have a fan gathering in the States to kind of, sort of like they do in Germany, to sort of consolidate the fan base a little bit more, because it's a bit, you know, scattered over here by virtue of the fact that the United States is so big. But there's a lot of Zappa fans here, and they're not very hard to find, actually. So, if there was a way to get... I'm just thinking out loud here, but if there was a way to do a fan gathering... and have some guests and, you know, sort of like a convention or something, it would be great to bring you over here.
That would be good, yes. But the day that they had in Baltimore for the Zappa Day, that seems to have dwindled out, doesn't it?
Yeah, they did have the day in Baltimore, but I thought there was going to be more events like that. Because I think the ideal place is not Baltimore. I think it's New York. Or Los Angeles. I think those are your two ideal places to have a fan gathering. But I guess I haven't heard anything, and I don't think there is anything in the works.
I was interested to see that there's a Zappa Sisters, that's a women Zappa band.
Yes.
Are having a get together in Amsterdam this weekend.
Are they?
They've set that up on Facebook.
Yeah.
And that's quite good. I would have liked to have gone to that, but I can't get over there. So I said, well, hopefully they could do something in London, and that would be good.
There is a hardcore of fans that go to various events. There's a weekend in Belgium this weekend, I think, the half weekend. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people are going to that. There are, you know, the boyfriends and wives of some of the hardcore Zappa fans are now getting together as the Zappa Sisters. So, you know, they've bonded over the years from different events that they've attended.
Oh, where is that? Where is that?
One that's taking place in Belgium this weekend, I think.
Yes, I see. Oh, I didn't see that one. Right.
Yeah.
I forgot to say, Pauline, did you know that Don and Bunk were over recently in London? They played at underneath Chelsea football ground.
No, I didn't know that. You should have told me.
I thought of it too late. I went to see him myself, but it didn't dawn on me really to flag it up.
Yeah, you have to keep Pauline in the loop on these things, Andrew, yeah. Since you know everything.
Did you? Was it just the two of them?
No. It was the grandmothers, which is reformulated. We've done. Taken on most of the vocals, and Bunk, who's come out of semi-retirement to join him, but it's the same drummer who's been with them for the last 15 years, I think, nearly, Chris Garcia, mm-hmm. The new stunt guitarist, and Dave Parlato, who's the bass player that played with Frank,
yep.
In the Petite Wazoo, the Grand Wazoo, and part of the Edna Seals orchestra as well, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
Oh.
Yeah.
How many people were there?
Well, that's the other thing. Yeah, you're saying about these 500,000 Zappa fans on Facebook. When I first got there, I was disheartened because there was a sort of half a dozen of us, but it did slowly build up. It wasn't packed out, but it was there was a reasonable crowd there. Yeah, for a gig in London, it was on a Saturday night, it was reasonably well attended. But yeah, you still get the feeling that there are people just. Yeah, there are. If you go on places like the Zapateers website, those people are not interested in Facebook. Yeah, we don't go on Facebook, so they don't find out about things. There's a strange, snobbish attitude with some fans.
It is, yeah, it's true.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, they're I love the Zapateers to death. They're like a cult, you know.
Yeah.
You know, they're yeah. All those guys are not really on Facebook, and that's, you know. Several thousand fans there, wouldn't you say, Andrew?
Yeah.
I don't know how many of them are regular, but regularly checking into the boards, but it's pretty impressive, you know, how big the fan base actually is if, you know, considering that Frank has been gone for over 20 years.
Yeah, but the trouble is, as I've discussed with some of these guys, you know, we're all getting older, and we're all thinning out. And,
that's true. Yeah.
Well, I do think that comment by Dweezil that no one under the age of 40 has heard of Frank Zappa is probably quite true. I don't think he has permeated through very much. Only zealous people who are into, you know, really make an effort to find interesting music will find it.
That's pretty fair to say. I don't know what impact the deal that Gail had to reissue Frank's back catalog through Universal has had in terms of making it more available to younger people, other than the fact that now you can get most of Frank's catalog on Spotify, which is, you know, that free streaming service that basically anybody... But, you know... Anybody who wants to find interesting music can easily find it on Spotify, but you have to know it's there.
And each day, la 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 la,
That's our show. Thank you very much for listening. The Zappacast was produced and edited by Scott Parker, Andrew Greenaway, Mick Eakers, and Scott Fisher. Be sure to check out Andrew's website at www.idiotbastard.com for all the latest Zappa news, and also to purchase Andrew's book, Zappa the Hard Way, the definitive account of the 1988 Frank Zappa Broadway the Hard Way tour. For those of you interested in obtaining my Zappa books, my website is located at www.spbpublishing.webs.com, and if you order the books directly from me, I'll sign them for you. My books are also available from www.gndsmusic.com, purveyors of the finest Zappa merchandise anywhere, as well as www.amazon.com and many other right-thinking booksellers. And you should also check out Mick Eaker's excellent site on Frank's gear at www.zappasgear.com. And for more information about Scott Fisher, you can go to fishersflicker.com. That's F-I-S-C-H-E-R-S. FLICKER.com. Scott is a very wonderful musician and songwriter, and you can check out some of his music at that website. If you wish to contact us, drop us a line at MOI1969, that's 1969, at SNET.net. On behalf of Andrew Greenaway, Mick Eakers, and Scott Fisher, this is Scott Parker saying thank you again for listening. And until next time, good night, boys and girls.
Thanks a lot. Good night.